Good morning, Your Honors. Michelle Anderson on behalf of Mr. Alivio. The main issue on appeal stems from the large body of prejudicial gambling evidence which was admitted at trial against Mr. Alivio. Now, the government argues that this evidence was not prejudicial and that even if it was, the error was harmless. And neither argument, I think, is compelling based on this record. The government argues that being a gambler is not prejudicial because it's not bad character evidence, that gambling is legal in Nevada. It's a leisure activity engaged in by many. And I just think that that simply isn't true. Those facts are true, but it is an inflammatory label to a lot of people. And when we look at how...
Are you talking about the gambling evidence now? That's where you are? Well, isn't it an abuse of discretion standard of review for the district court?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
And didn't the court give some very limiting instructions as to the questions and as to the jury's ability to even consider this evidence?
No, Your Honor. There's something that the government sort of characterizes as a curative. And I think what Your Honor is referring to is the curative, what is characterized as a curative instruction at ER 33 through 34.
Right.
And what the judge said during the testimony of the debt collector at the Venetian, he stopped the testimony for a moment. He said, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about gambling, winning and losing through gambling. This wasn't a true curative, though, Your Honor. It sort of worsened the situation. It focused the case on gambling and didn't give the jurors the parameters of how it was to consider this evidence in the context of this case. It just asked the jurors if they understood that it was legal, stated some people have some hang-ups, but they should understand that it's legal. So I don't believe that that limiting instruction, if you want to characterize it as that.
I have to look at what the court did. It seemed to me the court was trying to say this can be admitted for some purpose but not for other purpose, which... My worry was that I'm not sure it was limiting, but that's the argument suggested.
Judge Smith, I agree that a true curative would have done that. It would have set out parameters for the jurors in how they were supposed to consider this evidence, but that's not what it did. This curative actually says, look, we're talking about gambling here. Everybody understand that it's legal. And I don't think that establishes the parameters in which the jurors were.
It seems to me in looking at the transcript that the district court was well aware, was he not, of the potential prejudice of this kind of evidence.
Oh,
trying to avoid going over the line.
I agree that the judge in this case was looking to limit the damage of this evidence, but I don't think that he did so successfully. It was sort of a day late and a dollar short, because when we look at the evidence holistically, it's a parade of gambler horribles in this case. The government went so far as to actually call Mr. Alivio a gambler through its witness, Ms. Limon, its tax preparer in this case, and that's found at ER 138. It went so far as to characterize him. I didn't call him a deadbeat gambler, but might as well have, because he was a person who lived an extravagant lifestyle, a comfortable lifestyle. That's found in the government's closing argument at ER 381 and ER 414. He was characterized as an irresponsible gambler who borrowed thousands of dollars to gamble and didn't pay it back when he should have.
Is your argument that his gambling activities should never have been put before the jury at all?
Well, I don't think.
In other words, they would have never known, but for these witnesses, that if the testimony you're challenging, that he had actually was a high roller in Las Vegas.
Well, I think in the context of this case, it didn't have any relevance.
But that's not my question. Well, in other words, your position is that any reference in any form to his being a gambler was irrelevant, and nothing about the jury should not have known that he had any gambling activities.
In the context of this case, yes, I believe that's true.
That's all I wanted to find out.
What about the fact that the representations were not a mistake or an accident?
Well, I think the
evidence go to that?
No. I don't see how the evidence of an unpaid gambling debt in Vegas.
Well, but the gambling evidence as it is, I'm not talking about one specific point of the evidence, but you just said to Judge Fisher you didn't think it was at all relevant. I guess I'm trying to figure out. The district court now I have to give that discretion to, and I have to suggest that is there any way that this evidence would come in? I guess I'm having a trouble why the gambling evidence doesn't come in to prove that the representations were not a mistake or an accident.
Well, if we're just talking about gambling evidence without looking at the specific pieces of evidence that were entered by the government in this case, it might have some marginal relevance to the question of whether or not Mr. Alivio knew he had income. That might have some marginal relevance. But we also have to engage in a 403 test to look at whether or not the prejudicial impact of that evidence overcame the probative value of that evidence. And I think the answer to that is clear.
Well, the tax preparer testified?
Yes, the tax preparer testified. Her name was Ms. Limon.
Right. And she was testifying as to whether or not, didn't she testify as to whether or not gambling winnings were disclosed to her?
Well, it's interesting. The government asked her a series of questions. They said to her, what are the standard questions that you ask clients when they come in the door? And she says, I ask them about their income. I ask them about jury duty. And then the government asked, do you ask about gambling activity? And she says, no, I don't specifically always ask about that. So in the government's direct testimony of this witness, she never established that she always asks
about sources of income.
She does ask about sources of income, but when asked that question specifically by the government, did you ask, is this part of your standard questions? Do you specifically ask about gambling activity? She said, no, it's not.
So it's not proper follow-up to ask if he revealed any gambling activity?
I think that it questions relevance if she doesn't ask that question in the first place.
Wait a minute. I fill out a questionnaire for my tax preparation. It says, list your sources of income. All right, so I don't put down gambling, and so if it's not proper to ask her that, do you specifically ask the leading question about gambling? What's wrong with then asking, did he voluntarily tell you in response to a sources of income that he made anything from gambling?
Well, I guess if we're asking what she specifically asked Mr. Alivio, and you're asking whether or not it's proper for them to ask her that question, whether or not...
I'm sorry. let's stay with her, the tax preparer. I've got the tax preparer on the stand, and I would have two questions. One, did you ask him?
Mm-hmm.
Two, did he volunteer the information about gambling? Either one would be a relevant question if you're dealing with somebody who is accused of non-reporting of income. It's all sources of income.
If that, Your Honor, I think that would be true if he had gambling income. In this case, he didn't have gambling income that was subject to tax liability.
How do you know that?
Because it's the government's evidence.
What? He had the income, he just offset it with losses, right?
Well, in that sense, that's true. That's
counsel,
true.
You know, I don't know how you try cases. I understand you're trying to represent your client, but to say that it is not relevant for the government to ask a witness who prepares his taxes what kind of information was disclosed, either in response to a direct question by her or a general question which would have called for an honest statement of all sources of income. Her job is then to figure out whether he pays taxes on that income, correct?
The way that's framed, that's true, Your Honor. Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Now, but When we talk about the follow-up question to that, Your Honor, it wasn't did he have receipts from gambling. It was did he tell you that he was a gambler. Well, it was name-calling after that, Your Honor. That wasn't the focus of that inquiry. Point,
and that's why I asked at the outset. Is your position that the fact that he gambled, none of that should be before the jury? And you have an absolutist position on that. If gambling was legitimately going to be mentioned, and it's fact that he did some gambling, then the whole analysis of prejudice differs. If it's a secret that he gambled, then the fact that it came out at all would be one level of prejudice. If the fact that he gambled was relevant in some respect, then the question is, as you're now arguing, that, well, it's how it got characterized, how it got emphasized, and that's what I'm trying to just get focus on.
And I'd like to focus on the second prong. And
you've used your time, so we'll give you 30 seconds okay. to focus on exactly where. I'd like to know exactly where is the abuse here if we assume that it was relevant for some purpose.
If you assume that it was relevant for some purpose, and that purpose being that income from gambling is reportable, regardless of whether it's offset from the losses, and in this case they were eclipsed by the losses, what happened here is the government took it too far.
Where is the abuse? Okay.
Okay.
Just finish that sentence.
The government took it too far. They used 50% of their witnesses to discuss the gambling activity. They brought in the debt collector from the Venetian to talk about a gambling debt that he didn't resolve. They talked to they elicited testimony from her that when she called him, this was after notices had been sent to him about this unpaid gambling debt. A lot of time was spent on this. And then when the government had the opportunity to argue its case during its closing argument, they used that evidence in inappropriate ways. Gaming at the Venetian, using metaphors about losing at the tables but hitting the jackpot with their businesses, as well as an overall emphasis on how he was irresponsible in paying that unpaid gambling debt. And that had no relevance in the context of this tax case.
Thank you. You have used your time.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Darwin Thomas, Assistant United States Attorney in Los Angeles, appearing for the United States in this matter. Your Honors, there's really only one issue here, and that is whether the trial court abused its discretion in allowing into evidence some testimony that referenced the defendant's gambling activities. Now, there is a slightly different issue with respect to the closing argument, but I believe that that issue is simply derivative of the admission into evidence of the some of the gambling activities of the defendant. And in many instances, the defendant did not even object with respect to the specific questions or answers at the time of trial, but we have treated the standard review as being abuse of discretion in any event. First, it should be noted that the references in the record to the defendant's gambling activities is really quite limited. Previously, opposing counsel was discussing the references with respect to the return preparer, Mrs. Limon, and she was asked whether she asked her clients whether they had gambling income or other types of income. And she was then asked, as Your Honor pointed out, whether the defendant relayed to her or gave her any information about his gambling income or losses. In about 100 pages of testimony in the transcript, those are the only two references with respect to Ms. Lima to any gambling activities. So the fact is that the references to the gambling in the record are really quite limited.
What about, let's go over to Ms. Wheelock.
Ms. Wheelock.
That seemed to be more of a reach.
Well, Ms. Wheelock was a very important witness for the exact testimony that she gave. She didn't really talk about Mr. Alivio's gambling activities in terms of what he did or his losses. The four things that she testified to was, one, that he did have gambling winnings, $34,000 on one day. Now, the record doesn't reflect what his gambling losses might have been to offset his winnings, but it was reportable income that he had gambling winnings. He also transferred large amounts of the business's income and receipts to the casino for his personal account, and that information is directly relevant to the issue of whether the defendant had income that he should have reported on his tax returns and failed to. To show what a person does with the income that they have in taking it and using it for personal purposes, it shows that it was income to the individual, and it's relevant to proving that the tax returns were false. The next thing that was derived from Ms. Wheelock was the fact that when the defendant applied for extensions of credit with the casino, he used as a reference, as required by the casino, a bank account reference, which was the business's bank account. So he was using the business's bank account, the business's assets, to fund his personal activities and to derive credit from the casino. So it goes to showing his knowledge of the income and his use of the income for personal purposes.
I think that's where the court intervened at one point. Isn't that where, am I recalling correctly, that the Q&A on that one began to, in the court's view, get a little over the line?
Yes, I believe, I understand what you're saying, Your Honor, that the questioning then went somewhat beyond that. One of the things that defendant has objected to in the record was that Ms. Wheelock was then asked to look at the bank account statement for the period of time when the defendant told her that he had no money and that his business wasn't making any income. Now, granted, she had no knowledge of that particular item before. In fact, presumably, Ms. Wheelock didn't know that the defendant had been lying to her before. But those bank records were in evidence. It wasn't something that she was asked to make an opinion. She simply was asked to state what the bank account references said. But I think the last thing with respect to Ms. Wheelock's testimony is that the defendant told the same lies to Ms. Wheelock, which, as I stated, maybe Ms. Wheelock did not even know were lies until a certain point in time, that he told to his return preparer, Ms. Limon, with respect to his financial wherewithal. His businesses weren't making any income, and his family had cut off his money supply, which is totally false. That evidence was directly relevant to the willfulness of the defendant, showing his knowledge and showing a common scheme that he used to deflect creditors. It corroborated Ms. Limon's testimony that this is what the defendant was representing to her. And the credibility of Ms. Limon, the tax return preparer, was the main thing that the defendant said right from the beginning, right with opening statement, you're going to have to decide whether she's a credible person. So this information from Ms. Wheelock, although it concerns lying to a different person, it is very corroborative of exactly what the defendant was telling Ms. Limon, and it's a direct evidence of willfulness on his part. I will briefly address the arguments in closing argument. The government believes there that the arguments were certainly fair use of the evidence that was admitted at trial. The standard that needs to be applied at this court is whether there was clear error, because there were no objections at the time. And I believe that that's quite clear, that there's no clear error, particularly because this wasn't something that the prosecutor just grabbed at to illustrate some, bad character act of somebody who'd robbed a bank or something. The evidence that he was relying upon was directly involved in the underlying case. I believe that the instruction given by the judge during the course of the trial should be called a cautionary instruction as opposed to a curative instruction. I don't think that there was any error made. In fact, the government's position is that if you go to Las Vegas and you gamble, that's a wholly legal activity, and it's not character evidence at all. And the focus of all of the evidence that was introduced here regarding the defendant's gambling didn't have to do with his gambling per se, whether it was a good thing or a bad thing or whether he was a bad character. It had to do with his financial transactions with the casino. It had to do with the transactions that he had with his creditors and the information that he gave to his creditors. And as such, we don't believe that 404B is really even implicated here. So I think that the record is quite clear. The use of the gambling information in the prosecution was essentially necessary to prove the crimes that were charged, and there really was no prejudice at all to the defendant from the fact that he was identified as a person who went to Las Vegas and gambled. So if there are no questions from the panel, I will. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The matter just argued is submitted for decision.